Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you live a more positively minded life. Assisted in the studio today, Julian Joiello and Ben. Hey, Ben. Hey, Julian, welcome back.
Hi, hello.
Ben Starr,
nice
Julian
Joiello,
here we are. And today I've got a very interesting question here. The question is the following. I was at a swimming pool, right? Nice place to be in the summer. I looked around the swimming pool. This happened to be out at the Hamptons, yes. And there were four pairs of twins. I mean, there were four different women, young women. I'm talking women in their 30s with twins. And this is very odd. Rarely do I see one, two, four pair. And then I was walking around uptown on the Upper East Side, and I noticed there were a lot of double carriages. Now, these were not all to young women. Some of these were to older women. But double carriages, more twins. So twins are suddenly appearing, meaning people that are born at the same time, right, in one womb. What's this? So anyway, we got to investigate this because I think this is very important. It's important now. For now, you will know somebody who's a twin. You have some stupid things that you believe about things, about twins automatically. We're going to debunk some of that. And we brought with us a specialist, Joan Friedman, who wrote a book, The Same But Different. I've asked Joan to be on with us to help us clarify some of what this is, and I think you're going to find it intriguing, friends. It's really fascinating stuff. Many years ago, I was doing research in multiple personality disorder, and one of our hypotheses was that a person with a multiple personality was really a twin that never separated. And that kind of bore out a little bit. We didn't take that far enough. But let's take this to the beginning. Let's go to Joan. Joan, welcome to WBAI. Welcome to our New York.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Right. You're from Los Angeles, huh?
I am. And I came into some beautiful fall weather today.
Nice. Nice today. Huh?
Yep.
So let me ask you something, Joan. Are there more twins or is it just my imagination?
No, you are absolutely correct. There are a lot more twins born these days. And I think in the 80s, it used to be one in 53 births. And today, it's one in 30 births are twin births.
I think it may be even less than that because from what I saw, according to what culture, of course, if you're people with money seem to have more twins than people without money.
Well, people who have delayed childbearing, lots of women wait. Their careers are established in their 30s and 40s, and they believe that they're going to be able to have kids, and they can't. So they go to get in vitro fertility treatments in order to get their pregnancy going because they find out that their body just isn't producing the eggs that they need.
For them who may not know, in vitro means what?
In vitro means that you take, you extract eggs from the woman and you mix it in a petri dish with a sperm, and then you inject the embryo back into the woman's womb. And sometimes they put two embryos in, and then you have twin births.
Well, don't they often put in many embryos, not just two?
Well, actually, that's changing now because of all the awful implications of having four, five, and six embryos. So they're really trying to reduce that. And now they're trying to put in two. So they can just have a double, you know, a twin birth, because it's a very high risk birth when you have two or more. There's usually preterm labor. The twins can be born early. The mother is more at risk for medical complications. So they're really trying to keep the number of embryos at two.
The disadvantage of having twins, there's some dangers to it, you say. What's the danger?
The danger is that the babies are often born early. And when they're born early, they have complications. They might be in the neonatal unit for many, many months. So it's a rough beginning for some twins that can't go full term.
If you have, okay, so you're a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a young woman be getting, why would there be so many young people? I mean, in their 30s with twins.
Well, a lot of, you can have twins spontaneously. Identical twins are born usually, you know, spontaneously. So some, that does not skip a generation as people often think. And also there's some studies that say that women who've had fraternal twins in their family are more likely to have twins. So there are some real natural spontaneous births with twins. So you find women in their 20s and 30s having natural twin births.
I think it's more needing to control things. I think what happens is people say, it's time to have a baby. I'm 25 years old. Let's go to work at it. Oh, it didn't work. We're not having babies. Well, I'm not going to wait. Let's go do the dish thing. And I think that's what happens nowadays. I think nowadays people are just impatient. They don't want to go the other way, which is fine. And they're just following the plan of having the babies when they want to have the babies. Because you can even see, I want to have a baby 18 months after the first baby. I want to have one who can play with a third one. And so I think people's need to control, especially when there are the, when you have the assets, when you have the finances where you could afford to do this.
Well, it's very funny because women say now that, you know, it used to be in the olden days, they used to ask you, oh, who's older, or, you know, who was born first? Now the first question that they are asked is, was this a spontaneous birth, or was this a birth that came from fertility treatments? That's the first question that moms of twins get these days. So you're right, times have very much changed.
Well, there are a lot of simple questions that people ask of twins. What are some of the ones that are not as nice? I mean, some of the things that you say to a person with twins that are just stupid things to ask.
Well, mothers of twins are notorious for all the stupid questions or things they've been told or asked, like who's more sociable, who walked first, who's more athletic, who's more artistic, who do you love more? Things like this that really make it difficult for people to get to know each baby. They're trying to figure out these differences in them rather than being able to kind of know who each baby is.
So that's what the twin mystique is?
The twin mystique is yes, it's what we project onto twins, that they have ESP, they love each other, they're soulmates, they're never alone, and it's this idealized sense that being a twin is the best thing in the world. And people often don't talk about some of the downsides of being a twin, of which there are many.
Well, let me ask Julian. Julian, you're a twin.
Yes, I am a fraternal twin.
Hi,
Lulu.
A fraternal twin. And is Lulu listening?
She'll probably listen to this later.
Right. So you and Lulu, now Lulu's your best friend, isn't she?
She's definitely, yes, she's definitely one of my closest friends, yes.
Oh,
my
sister. Said one thing, you said another.
She is. In a lot of ways, when we spend time with each other, we are very close, but we don't necessarily see each other like every day or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, now you and she have been very, very tight, growing up in an environment that at times was hostile.
Yes, I mean, you know, my sister went through puberty when I was 12 and she was 12, but it's a very different thing when you're a girl and you're 12 from a guy that's 12. When she's taller than me, she's stronger than me. There was definitely a year where I heard a lot of, I hate you, throwing things at me, that sort of thing. And I thought our relationship would never get better, but obviously it did.
Now, you feel closer to her than any other human in the world, right?
In a lot of ways,
from,
yes.
From what you've told me, I'm not guessing at
yes,
this.
No. I mean, it's true. And it's interesting because it's not even like, again, it's not like I see her every day. But when we do spend time with each other, if we get a drink at a bar or something like that, catch up, it's amazing like what kind of connection I feel again with her. And we say this to each other. It's unspoken and it's sort of, we spent 18 years of our lives living together and most of it was me and her alone. A lot of it was my father working because he was a single parent in New York, you know. So it was a lot of us spending time with each other, learning from each other, telling each other what we experienced and what she experienced and comparing it to each other, and a lot of us raising ourselves. So
why would you not, somewhere later in life, and this is where you're going to come into this, Joan, with us, why would you not say to yourself, you know, if I'm going to have a relationship with anybody, and I've met the person you have a relationship with who's
yes.
a wonderful human being. You want to say her name?
She is Jackie. Yes,
Jackie,
she is.
You Jackie are a Kayla, beautiful, yes. fantastic beautiful. Human being. I just saw photographs of the two of you together. You're gorgeous.
Thank
but
you.
Why wouldn't you want to have somebody who feels at least as good as your sister. You know what I mean? I mean, isn't that now the standard that you hold up? I want somebody who's going to love me like my sister did.
It's different. It's different for me. Okay. I have to say, like, it's, you know, my sister, I mean, she's my sister and we're very close. She makes fun of me all the time, though. It's like, it's, you know, but not in a harsh way, but it's, we bicker with each other. We, it's a different thing than a relationship. I know it's helped me understand women a lot more, having having a twin sister, like, by far. I think I have one of the best abilities to communicate with a woman in an intimate way, as a friend or as a girlfriend, because of my relationship with my sister growing up. I feel like that definitely like affected me and made me more available in that sense.
We're speaking with Julian Joiello and Dr. Joan A. Friedman, author of the book The Same But Different, a fascinating study about twinship. It's called Twinship. Joan, in hearing what Julian just had to say, it must have triggered a lot of thoughts in your mind. Can you talk about it?
Absolutely. I think the boy-girl situation is often the best and easiest twinship to develop, because it's almost like your gender differences enable you to kind of have a life apart from one another, but also have a life together. You know, same-sex twins, identicals more than fraternals, but both sort of suffer in many ways. Their relationship and their intimacy is often so close that they don't have the capacity to be separate or to be apart or in some way to differentiate the way that you and Lulu were able to do. And oftentimes they're so overly dependent on each other, and they often feel like half of a whole, that when they go off to try to have relationships, they have some difficulty. One thing that twins often tell me is they expect to have instant intimacy because they've had a roommate for 18 years and the roommate knows them verbally, non-verbally, and they just have a connection without often having to talk. And that's not ESP. That's just familiarity of living with someone in the same room. And people often say, oh, must be ESP, but it's not. So think about what happens. They go off to college and they have a roommate. Well, they cannot relate to this roommate because it's not their twin. And they're also expecting to be best friends, to be understood, to be, you know, accepted. And it is a rude awakening to all of a sudden figure out, my God, relationships, it takes time. You have to get to know them. You have to sort of develop intimacy on a slower scale. And it's something they've never experienced and often are wondering why this is happening.
But that doesn't only take place with twins.
Well,
if a person has a relationship with their mother, for example, a guy who lives with his mother is going to feel the same way when he gets to the wife. Why doesn't she just understand me automatically?
Yeah, but you make a different kind of relationship with a peer than you make with your mother. And a roommate is not your mother. And a roommate is someone that you are supposedly developing a rapport with. So it's a different kind of expectation.
Yeah, and there was definitely something, I mean, when you're saying about this roommate thing, I mean, I shared a room with my sister. We had the same loft bed, and it was across from each other. So every night, I didn't even think about this, but every night, I just realized, the last hour before we're going to sleep, we would have, like, some kind of conversation at night. Before we go to sleep, good night, but we would talk about some weird thing that we're experiencing. And it's like having this, like, in-house therapist to talk to in a lot of ways, because it's like, I really like this girl, or like, I don't know what that is, or like, I don't know. And then it was like that every night, actually. And we would talk for hours, and my dad would come in and say, shut up, go to sleep. But it's different, because then all of a sudden I have this roommate who's a guy friend of mine who, and in general, I find myself really lacking the kind of friendship with my guy friends that I wish I had. And I find that in girls instead. So a lot of my guy friends, I wish I could talk to them in an intimate kind of way and open up. And it's really I've never been able to have a relationship with a guy like that. But instead, I'm able to do it with women in my life who are my close friends. And I can really sit down and actually have an open conversation, open heart conversation with them.
You know, that really makes me think about, it makes so much sense, because twins are always yakking to one another before they go to sleep if they shared a room, and it is such an integral part of their growing up. And what often I've seen, and I write a lot about this in my book, is when when twins go to have a relationship, and I think it's mostly same-sex twins, it is so hard to make room and space for another, an intimate other. I just got an email from this gentleman who said, I married an identical twin. We dated for a long time, but now that we're married, I see that every decision that she makes is she calls her sister first. I feel like there's no emotional space for me. If anything happens, if something comes up, but there's an emergency, the first person she calls is her sister. And I had the same issue when I got married. I would automatically call my sister. It was just habitual without thinking until my husband said, why are you always calling Jane? Why aren't you talking to me about this? And I really had no awareness that I was even doing that. It's a knee-jerk reaction to the intimate relationship that you've had for so long.
And that sort of alludes to one of the main questions I had for you, Dr. Freeman. This is now your second book on twins.
Yes.
You also wrote Emotionally Healthy Twins.
Yes.
And now you've written The Same But Different, which I saw on Amazon as a really high user review. It's got 4.9 out of 5 stars, which is impressive.
All right.
But my question for you is, you are, not only are you an identical twin, you're the mother to twins, mm-hmm. fraternal, right?
Correct.
So how has that personal experience informed your life's work? Did you already have fraternal twins before you decided to go into this field, or were you already studying this because it was something that was an experience you had, and then you had fraternal twins?
Well, I know we don't have a million years. I'll try to make a very succinct answer.
And why didn't you publish both books at the same time?
Wish I would have. No, that's a very good question. No, being raised as a twin always had informed my sense of self or my non-sense of self, because I really felt in a way robbed of knowing who I was, because when Jane and I were born a long time ago, we were rock stars. You know, everyone knew the Friedman twins, but no one knew who either one of us was. We had never been separated. We're dressed alike forever. So we went to different colleges and literally sort of both fell apart. We were like fish out of water. We'd never been by ourselves. This whole idea of not being a twin had never even kind of occurred to us. So the funny thing was is that we repeated our twinship patterns. Like, I was the caretaking twin. So I found the most depressed woman at the University of Michigan to take care of. And Jane found a roommate who was a loudmouth, opinionated, assertive, aggressive woman, which I think was me. So she has stayed best friends with her roommate from college. And I went on to become a therapist because I had always been a caretaking twin. So when I found out I was pregnant with Johnny and David, these were our fourth and fifth children, I thought, oh, great. I'm going to raise them in ways that I wish Jane and I had been raised. And yes, very much informed my first book, which is all about what I think parents need to know about what twins needs as twins are growing up.
Had you finished your doctorate at that point, or were you already in the process of working on it?
Oh, I actually had finished both of them. And I had written both of them on twins, actually. So it was always something that I was trying to figure out myself in addition to my patients.
So yeah. It sounds like a major struggle of being an identical twin is sort of a struggle to assert individuality and identity and really learn what that is.
And so much of that has to do with how we're raised. I think parents these days are much more enlightened about how to give twins a sense of their own individuality, even though it's hard when society and everybody else is trying to take it away. But yes, but growing up, for us, there was really, my parents had no roadmap, and we were really kind of surrogate parents to one another. Jane and I raised one another. I mean, I know that's what Julian said, but it was different. We had two parents, but our parents were not involved. And I see this still with parents now. There's a misnomer, a misconception that parents think that twins just want to be with each other and they're going to take care of each other. And in some way, parents seem to opt out of their responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's even more important as a parent of twin not to opt out. And that's the message of my first book, which is the parent-child attachment is so much more important than the twin-to-twin attachment. But the assumption is, oh, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to break into it. They need each other. They want to be together. But what they're doing is they just sort of unknowingly reinforcing the overdependence and even the addiction that some twins have to one another. So by the time they reach young adulthood, when they're supposed to be on their own, making decisions, having relationships, finding jobs, figuring out what they want to do, they can't.
The parents abdicate.
They do.
They do. They abdicate their roles as parents because there's a convenience. The convenience is that the convenience is that there's somebody else to take care of the other one. And this is the way it is. You have somebody else who's going to take care. They're going to feed each other's needs. And they're okay together.
Well, you know, it's true. And I,
now, when you have, I meant to ask you this. Sure. If you have one child that's not a twin, and then two that are twins, where do you put your attention?
Well, it depends on the ages. I mean, the older children at least have a life outside of the house, you know. So if you have a 4 or 5 or 6-year-old, they have a life. But when you have 3 small children that are home and you have 2 infant twins who are overwhelming you with their needs, it's, you know, mothers, I understand why they abdicate. I try to sort of take a kind of a common ground here. I know why they abdicate, because they're overwhelmed. It is so difficult taking care of 2 babies at the same time, fulfilling their emotional and physical needs. What I always advocate, which people are really resistant to, which I thought was a brilliant idea, is that alone time. And even women that have help who can do alone time seem resistant to doing it. And I think they often say, well, if I want alone time, I want to be alone. So, but alone time with each twin is really, I think, the best way that you figure out that kid's temperament, personality, and you try to establish a parent-child connection.
So once in a while you take Julian to the movies.
That's right.
And another time you take Lulu to the movies.
Yeah, and you leave the other one home, or other one goes someplace else. Yeah, you really try to change off. But what happens is, again, another conundrum, is parents of twins always are trying to make the lives of twins fair and equal. And there is no such thing, but parents are so uncomfortable with twins or any of their children going, it's not fair. So-and-so got to do this. So-and-so got to do that. And what they end up doing is trying to make things fair. And then when these children become adults and they're in a world where the world is usually unfair, it's a big kind of like eye-opening experience. Like, how can this possibly be? And it is a parental role and responsibility to develop resilience in a child, whether it's a singleton or a twin. And the way you develop resilience in twins is to try to give them separate experiences, so when they're ready to go to college, they can be on their own.
When you have two people who are twins, and they have negative feelings towards each other, I imagine sometimes, even though it seems, you know, the literature says they have difficulty expressing their feelings towards each other, it must be hard to identify your feelings. How do you know what you feel towards your twin? How do you know if you're angry or sad or mad or glad? So I'm not so sure that, since the research says, oh, no, they have a greater difficulty expressing their feelings, it may be more hard to identify your feelings if you're a twin.
You know what it's hard to identify? It's not so much your feelings, but your needs. This is what took me years to figure out. Who am I and what do I need? My feelings I knew, not that I could express them or be authentic or open, but I couldn't figure out what I needed because I was always concerned about what Jane needed. And she wasn't on this wavelength. I was. So I never could figure out what I wanted or what I needed, because I was worried about, well, how would that impact Jane? And what would happen? And what would she think? And what would she feel? And twins definitely, many twins definitely suffer with this.
Dr. Freedom, I'm curious to know if there's one myth or stereotype about twins that you'd like to just put down right now and really dispel. What would that be?
The myth is that not all twins get along. Not all twins talk to each other every day. Not all twins are going to be soulmates or have ESP. They can be siblings. They can love each other. They can like each other. They can hate each other. But they are not part of this stereotypic, idealized thing that we often hear about twins, that they're just normal people wanting normal relationships with siblings.
Because the stereotype is that the average twins have a much stronger bond than the average siblings.
Yes, and I think some do. I could say probably more twins get along than don't, possibly. I don't know. I think, again, it's in the shadows, but it's hard to know.
Well, that's the same but different. Author Joan A. Friedman. And once again, this is available on Amazon.com. Very highly rated book highly, right here. Very highly rated.
Joan, how common is it for twins to select friends and lovers that remind them of the bond that they share? That was kind of the question I was asking Julian.
Mm-hmm.
How common is it? Is it something that they look for?
I think a lot of twins are so unaware of their own twin dynamic that they choose people that, well, I was at Twinsburg, at the Twinsburg Festival, you know, where all the twins come and it happens every year.
No. What is that?
There's a festival for that?
Oh, my gosh. You know, guys don't know about this. I've known about this my whole life, and I never wanted to go, but I finally went. It's in Twinsburg, Ohio. It's the 40th year is coming up. It's the first weekend in August. Twinsburg is a city. It's a half an hour outside of Cleveland, founded by twin men who bought the land, named the area Twinsburg. And it's famous for this festival. Every year, August 1st, 8,000 twins descend upon the Twinsburg for the weekend. And they have parades and talent shows and research booths, and everyone dresses identically. So I went there to pitch my book. I always wanted to see it. And here's my best description, and there's nothing pejorative about it. It's like a gay pride parade and rally, but with twins. And it's an amazing spectacle. And they have twins from all over the world.
Is it all identical twins?
It's mostly identical twins. But, I mean, it's so interesting because some of the fraternal twins actually apologized for not being identical.
Oh, my God.
So it really is amazingly mostly identical twins, and they do a lot of great research where they want twins there. They're testing for biometrics and sense of smell and macular degeneration, and very, very interesting. And one woman said, you know, I love coming to this festival. It's addicting because I don't feel like a freak. So just being with like-minded identical twins and having a reunion with his or her twin was a great thing to do.
Well, it's probably also because, you know, the liquor is fairly loose because, you know, it's a constant happy hour. It's 2-for-1. 2-for-1, you know, you could easily drink your charm away. Well, it must be a fun thing to go to.
Do they
allow outsiders?
Yes. Of course you can come as an outsider.
And when you say 8,000 people, is that 8,000 twins or sets of twins?
It's 8,000 people with about 4,000 sets of twins.
4,000 sets of twins, wow. Plus yeah. Me, plus Julian, plus... This may be a very worthwhile trip, you know.
But what I meant to say was there was a guy wearing a sweatshirt, and on it said, "Real men date twins." And I thought that was so fascinating because it is hard to date a twin. It's often because you're not dating one, you're dating both. And I think that's a very interesting piece of that people don't really know about, especially with female identical twins. To make room for another person is not easy.
Well, Joan, how would that fit for real women date male twins? Do women have the same trouble dating male twins?
Absolutely. I've counseled women who have married twins, and actually, if you are not a secure person or you're really laid back, you're second. You're not first. That twin relationship is so prominent and important that you need to be able to be secure enough to take a back seat.
More and more, it seems like the relationship between neurotic twins, or when there's a kind of a disturbed connection, is much like between a parent and a child. Because in many ways, it's hard to marry somebody who's married to their mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to marry somebody who's married to their father.
Right.
And it's those kind of outside connections that you can't break through. We're going to have to explore this a little further. My guest, Joan Friedman, author of The Same But Different. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, my friends, more of this stuff. And this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're back with you. Joan, teach us a little more.
Let's see.
How do twins enter into different from friendships and romantic relationships as individuals on their own terms?
So many of the women and men that I've counseled are only able to make relationships once they've physically moved away from their twin. One woman told me this great story that she saw her twin falling in love with a man, and she realized that she was going to have to move away for 6 months in order to give her sister the time and space and the emotional room to fall in love and get married, is what she did. So that was a very loving and wonderful twin sister who recognized that. So oftentimes it happens if you're emotionally already kind of separate, or you can give each other the physical room to get what you need.
Would you say competition is something that happens naturally in a twin relationship? And if so, is it healthy?
Well, you know, you always hear all the Bryant twins are these tennis players. They're 36-year-old identical males, and they just won their 100th doubles tennis title. They keep their competition in such an amazing synergy where they're able to just perform because they can read each other's cues verbally and nonverbally, and they've played together for so many years. So that's really a beautiful example of twin competition that has a wonderful outcome. Other kinds of twin competition, you know, lots of times, like there were these British gymnasts, and there was one space on the Olympic gymnast team, and one didn't want to leave the other, so they both joined Cirque du Soleil. So it depends if twins are going to in some way be competitive or find a way to sort of hide it.
Well, examples of, say, high-level athletes that are older. What about competition in twins at a younger age, in school, for example?
Well, it's always an issue because siblings are always competing with each other and people are always comparing them. And with twins, it's even more exaggerated. So it really depends on how the parents are able to handle this. If parents are really able to see and treat each twin as an individual, they take in the fact that one might be better than math, one might be better than English. They see that there's a healthy competition, and they try to sort of integrate that into families, because that's what all children have, is all siblings are normally competitive. But I think when parents are so uncomfortable and anxious about competition, of one doing better than the other, they become so anxious about it that it transfers to the children. And I've heard so many adult twins tell me these are things they really remember, and they're angry about that. One woman said to me, I made the varsity soccer team in high school. My sister didn't. The coach decided that neither one of us could be on the team because they didn't want one to be left without the other. Now, this is what is so highly unfair about people interacting, parents and coaches and teachers and even friends and relatives, not understanding that not doing one thing for one twin and not for the other in order to make the twins equal, that fuels competition rather than puts them in situations where they learn how to handle the competition, and that's a part of life.
You know, if you have a almost any two children will have divide, daddy's going to like the daughter, mommy's going to like the son, you know, or there's some kind of division like that. Now, with twins, is there usually one parent favoring one as opposed to another parent favoring the other? Does the same thing kind of happen?
Well, this is an interesting question because mothers of twins have a very difficult time feeling guilty and terrible that they don't love each baby the same. Because somehow in their minds, there's an expectation that if they don't love each other the same, that there's something wrong. When I talk to parents of twins, as I will be this evening, I often stress that you can't love anybody the same. I have five children. I love them all, but I clearly love one more than the other just because I feel more compatible, or there's more of a match in our temperaments or our personalities. And, you know, it's bound to happen. It's just a question of being authentic and honest with yourself, that when you're feeling that way toward your children, or especially when your children are younger or your twins, be aware of it. Don't talk about it, but know that that's okay. You're being honest, and then really try to work on that relationship with the twin that you're feeling less connected to. Also, parents of twins will say their connection changes over time. They were in love with the baby that slept more. And then as the kids get older, they were in love with the baby, you know, that's, I don't know, that's more sociable. It ebbs and flows. But the important thing is to not feel that you have to love them the same. And in fact, that's detrimental because you're not taking in their differences and really getting to know each
twin. But there's no difference between that and having two children.
Yes, there is.
I mean, what's the difference? So they're twins or whether you have a boy or a girl, you know?
The difference is that when you're loving two babies that are the same age, that are born at the same time,
I see. You do not
have the psychological space that having different age siblings gives you to make a connection.
That makes sense. It's very different. That makes sense.
You know, it's interesting. When I was younger, it was a lot of this. I'm an actor, and my sister's a visual artist, designer. She's very... very different from acting. And when we were little, my father tried to get us to both be actors. And he would bring us on set and we would do little cute kind of modeling things. And people, over time, we were both very charismatic, but over time people started saying, okay, Julian's more charismatic and Lulu's more shy. She's more shy and inward and Julian is more outward and charismatic and sure. And this sort of turned into this whole thing where she, for a long time, thought that she was very shy, and I thought that I had to be very outward.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up becoming something that I felt like I had to live up to for most of my life, when a lot of the time I did feel very shy. And my sister, I think, was also very outgoing in a lot of ways, too. So I feel like there's a lot of this living up to the context of like what people are setting for you in that twin situation when it's we're the same age and we're being compared to each other constantly.
And being labeled.
Yeah, and then I mean I ended up being an actor and she ended up doing visual art and design, which is a much less obviously outgoing career choice. But I don't see her as being that way. She's become much more outgoing as she's become more independent and got out of that shyness, I think.
We want to take a couple of your calls today. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. That's 212-957-2729. If you're a twin or know a twin or have a question for Joan Friedman, author of The Same But Different, we'll be taking your calls as well. There are people who were twins who were separated at birth and only got to know each other a little later. You know about these studies?
I do know about the studies.
Tell me about them.
Okay. Well, what I do know is, again, Nancy Siegel is the woman. She's a geneticist, really, and she goes around the world trying to find twins that have been separated at birth, and then she reunites them and does a lot of studies to sort of genetically figure out how alike they are, how different they are. I believe in them and they're important, but I, again, as a clinician, I'm always kind of shying away from a genetic explanation for everything that goes on in twins. And basically she and I were on a radio show together and she got very angry with me because she felt that I was pathologizing so many twin issues and she felt that twins aren't any more in mental health clinics than anybody else. Of course, and I believe that's true, but she's very intent on showing the genetic similarities. Again, even if you've been raised apart for 50 years, you're still a lot alike in many ways in terms of personality and temperament and tastes and religion and things like that. So, yeah, they're interesting. And, of course, she sells thousands of books because people are so interested in how twins can be raised differently and yet be so similar. So,
well, you know, there's a concept of – it's such an interesting concept that we so often – sometimes I wonder if we don't remember mitosis. You know, like what it was like to be one cell that split into two cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that somewhere in life we have this sense that there's something missing. And I wonder, you know, this fascination with the other half or the missing part. Or in Judaism, you know, your beshert is the expression. It means there's another piece of you somewhere. So when we have an example of it through this kind of twinship, it's I think it's fascinating to people.
Mm-hmm.
Does it really exist?
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe? Do you believe that you, if you have a twin, that you know it somehow?
There are many people who do believe that.
What do you believe?
I basically don't. I never have had experiences like that, and but I certainly believe many people do. So I wouldn't want to say anything against those who do believe it. But there is something magical. It's what, you know, like Julian was saying when he gets together with his sister. There is like an instant connection. I get together with Jane and we laugh about stuff that no one else thinks is funny. It's fun, and we share an amazing amount of intimacy that's so nonverbal that no one else can share. But it's because I grew up and it was sort of fraught with a lot of problems in terms of identity and a sense of myself. I guess whatever magic may have been there sort of got lost. So that's my personal experience.
What about your children with your sister? How was that relationship? Do they automatically take to your sister, or did they feel a resistance to your sister?
They didn't. I know I've heard that they didn't automatically take to my sister. They really didn't. I believe that that's because my connection to them was so strong and so cemented that she was an aunt to them, but nothing extraordinary.
It wouldn't be extraordinary, because I would imagine it would be like, oh, there's a replacement for my mother.
Well, I do think that some children feel that way about their twin aunt or uncle. I've definitely heard that.
Also, what about relationships? So let's say a woman is dating a man who has an identical twin. What happens with that relationship with the other twin? Like, what do you think they feel about them? I mean, they look very similar, and then often if they're raised in that sort of way, they have a similar personality too. So are they attracted to them, or do they feel awkward that they're attracted to them, or that they look so similar?
Well, I think by the time that they're dating, that they've, you know, the man and the woman have had a sense of one another. So I think they know the other. There's not like they're
right,
not
of
being.
Course. I mean,
yeah. But I think what happens is that whatever the twin's relationship is with the twin, that person that comes in that triad, it becomes a triad. And I think they start to feel, I don't know, it's strange or it's wonderful, or there could be resentment, or I think it really just depends on sort of the mental health of everyone involved. Because I've talked to some twins, and the woman who has a husband who's a twin is fine, and other ones have trouble. So.
Sounds like it could make or break a relationship.
Yeah, it can. And I think, again, people are surprised that it does break a relationship. They don't really know they haven't really thought to expect that it's going to be an issue, but sort of dating one is dating two.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille back with you after a two-week hiatus due to circumstances. But we're back with you. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Be with you today and tomorrow. Linda Vanella will be back with us tomorrow as well. Joining us here in the studio, we've got quite an active gang doing some really good stuff. In the studio with me today, Joan Friedman from Los Angeles, and we're getting a call from Yosef. Hey, Yosef, how are you? There you are. Hello, Yosef. Oops. Hi, Yosef. There you are.
Hey, now I can hear you. How you doing?
Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I have a quick question to your guest. I happen to know of course, I knew many twins. But I went to school with the two twins, the identical twins. They're women, female, and one of them was really brilliant, very brilliant in the class. And she happened to be very active. Everything we do together. But the other one is always laid back and wasn't that really good like the other one. And the second one, the second two is that I've known is two men, right? What happened is when we became teenagers, one started dating one girl, and then it happened that the second one have to sleep with the same girl that his twins were dating. Is that part of competition that your guest was talking about?
I don't know if it's competition, but it's frequent. This happens a lot, I think. With twins, there are women twins who date the same man. There are men twins who date the same woman. It's almost like if you share the bed with someone else, you're kind of in some way following some kind of a biological imperative. It's the way it seems. It seems it's it, even though to us on the outside, it sounds crazy. It's an interesting compulsion. What do you think, Barbara, I'm sorry.
I wanted to address your first question about the identical twin girls where one was active and one was laid back. That's a very common phenomenon when you have identical twin girls. They both can't be that way. They're just, there's not room for each of them to be active and loud and brilliant. I think they often, again, which is difficult, they have to make a compromise. So one maybe who's more active, the other one has to become laid back. They have to find a way to balance one another. And it's kind of like what Julian was talking about earlier with his sister, that, you know, people sometimes label people in different ways and they become that way rather than that's actually who they really are or how they really feel. But you can't have two really active, competitive women in the same room, in the same house. They have to make some sort of compromise to have more of a balance.
Well, Joan, isn't it the same for people who are born, like, what about the timing? What about if you're 2 seconds before the other one or a minute before the other one? Does that lead to any guarantee of dominance?
You know, it's so interesting. When Johnny and David were born, my husband and I made a decision not to tell them who was older until their bar mitzvah. Because to have them be labeled, oh, you're older, you're younger, it's by a second. And when you have a C-section, it is by a second. So people take that second or that minute and make so much out of it that it becomes defining. Oh, I'm the older twin.
Sure.
So I don't know biologically what it does, but I know psychologically people make so much of it, and it's, again, it's another label that ends up having very little significance but taking on a big meaning.
So you don't think it has much validity?
I don't, especially because most twin births are C-sections. So whoever that doctor grabbed first is who's born first.
Oh, wait. Let's go to that, because I think you're saying something that most people wouldn't understand. If you do a C-section and you have twins, you have two babies there in the belly, that the doctor could grab either one. And whoever is born first is really whoever the doctor pulls out first?
That's correct.
Well, I was told I'm 2 minutes younger than my sister and that I was actually being sat on by my sister and she was crushing me, and this is why I'm different than her. Well, that's the
theory.
They
tell you all kinds of stories.
That's what I've been told.
I've heard that many times. I've heard that, oh, baby A was just beating up on baby B. And so they talk about this, and this is also in the parents' minds after the babies are born.
And they use it, you know, like you are being strangled by your other baby's umbilical cord.
Right, it became the thing. My sister's more aggressive,
had to
and
save
she's always...
You.
Exactly.
And that becomes a resentment now.
Yeah.
And that's because parents aren't sensitive to what they say. Hey, let's take another call. We got Jerome on the line. Hi, Jerome.
Hi. Briefly, you had explored your Enneagram studies.
Fascinating.
I would wonder what that comparison would be. And then also, could Joan discuss addictive patterns for twins? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, Joan, do you know anything about the Enneagram?
No, I don't.
Oh, boy, it's fascinating. Yeah, because it would be a fascinating thing for us to discover. But talk about the addictive patterns.
A lot of twins are addicted to one another, basically because they're very codependent. They can't get along without each other. It's the most primary relationship in their life. And if there's not a way that they end up being able to gradually separate and be on their own, these are the twins that I know, that I hear about, that I've read about, that they live together well into their 30s, 40s, and 50s. They don't marry. They end up having a life where they're just with one another. It happens with men, happens with women. And I think after a certain point, like in your 40s and 50s, when you haven't differentiated and made the life steps that people do during those ages, you do end up together, and it is very much an addictive pattern. And it's sad, because I've talked with men like this particularly who had wishes to go and have families of their own and marriages. But when asked at their ages of 40 and 50, well, if you were to marry, what would happen? I can't marry anymore. My life is with my brother. I passed the point of getting married, and this is my life. So there are.
It might not be addictive. It could be comfort.
Yes, that's true.
You know what I mean? It could just be I'm in my comfort place. Who wants to step outside of it?
That's right. But some addictions are very comforting.
That's true. It's true. Now, when we talk about addictions as well, is there any tendency for twins to have more of an attraction to substances?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I do not know. I do not know that.
The funny thing about it is, in what I know about rehab and I don't see many twins in rehab. Therefore, the question becomes, if you have each other to depend on, maybe you don't feel the need to reach out that way.
It's possible.
It'd be a fascinating study.
That would be.
212, we only have time. 212-957-2729. Ruth, you're on the line. Hi there. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi there. Thank you so much for the show. I'm a fraternal twin. I have a sister, and I really appreciate your show. My sister and I were fortunate enough to have parents who recognized very early on that even though we were born about 22 minutes apart, that we were two separate people. And we had our own language, our own secret language, between the two of us. We both sensed the same things at the same time. Even now, we bought the same shoes at the same time. It's very, different towns. We were we're very close. But my parents, initially they would dress us alike from time to time, but they realized at an early age that we were two separate individual people with different personalities. And the sad part of it was that other people would compare us and would say, who's the smarter of the two? Who's the more artistic of the two? And that's where the cruelty came in. And also in the 60s, the education system split twins up and split us up. And that caused another trauma to both of us, because we were separated and we were very close, so we were always looking for the other one. So,
Ruth, were you able to?
Let
me ask you a question. Were you able to find love in your life, a romantic relationship? What happened?
Oh yeah, both of us have, I should say each of us have. We have very different tastes, but we respect each other for the differences that we have found.
Could we approach that moment of the different tastes? You like somebody who's more laid back, and she likes somebody who's more aggressive?
Let me see. Well, she's always liked someone who was who gets things done and is a little bit more aggressive.
So she wants her mate to be more laid back.
In some ways, yes, but she likes to have men that do things for her. And,
right, and you like people who...
I'm more of a dude. I like people I like to do things for people, so...
So that difference is there.
There's a sort of a balance, in a way, between what we like.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Balance.
It's an interesting thing.
It is an interesting thing.
In your relationship with each other, were you doing more for her than she was more of the lead, or...
I'd have to say that I was more of the trailblazer, in terms of getting out there in life and exploring, and yet she was the one who was the more outgoing in terms of personality initially, and I would be more observing and sort of, you could look at the photographs, I would be sitting back observing and trying to case out the situation before I jumped in, and she'd be more like reaching out immediately. Now I'm more of the outgoing, meet people person, and she's more of the stay-at-home, homebody kind of person. So it's kind of shifted through the years. It's been very interesting to see how it's shifted through the years. But I think your program on this is so important, because people don't understand
one last thing.
Well.
Wait, before you go.
Sure.
If you could think, what's your sister's name?
Janet.
If Janet could hear you.
Yes.
And you could be talking to Janet about what life has been like with her.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to her here? If you could deliver a personal message to Janet, what would it be?
It would have to be that it's emotional.
I know.
I'm very lucky that I picked you as my twin. I'm very lucky that you came along. You weren't expected. I'm sorry. But she wasn't expected. My father knew that my mom was carrying twins, and the doctor did not. And when my sister was born, 22 minutes later, that was probably the best moment of my life, to know that I had a person that I could go through life with and share life with.
So beautiful, too, Janet. Thank you so much
for
what you're
saying. Thank you so much, really.
I'm sure if she could be on air right now, she would be saying the same to you.
She would be. She would be, and I'm going to have her call. Check your archives, because I checked in today, and I was like, I've got to tell Jan about this, because this is so important, and I am very blessed that whoever's in charge up there, you know, put us together on the planet.
I want to thank you very much. It. You know, do so, and if you want to stop by up here studio, I'd like to meet the two of you one day.
I will make that happen. Thank
Great.
You so much.
Thanks
for everything. To
thanks
both
for
of
calling
you.
In. Okay, sure. We're going to have to be going. This is Armand DeMille with you
Thanks
at the Positive Mind. Back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Our guest, Joan Friedman. Joan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Ben, thank you as usual. And, of course, Julian Joyello. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.